Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, OTG writer, podcaster, Corey Waldron. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How you doing? Big news in the NBA this week, today actually, with Phil Jackson. What are your initial thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, it came out around, I think it was like almost 3 a.m. that it came out that it looked like the Knicks were going to fire Phil Jackson. My initial thoughts is, you know, this is the best move the Knicks possibly could have made at this point in time. It just has not been successful in New York with Jackson. He's been a little bit too, I would probably say, sensitive with his ego. You know, there's been situations where it's looked like he's been bothered, so he went out and made a move. The whole thing with Kristaps Porzingis this last few weeks and everything like that. We know the Joakim Noah contract. We know the trades. You know, obviously he does have the bright spots with drafting Kristaps and Willie Hermann Gomez, but still, Knicks fans got to be happy today.
Yeah, my thoughts are similar. Crazy that it took this long for the Knicks to go downhill and spiral. You know, all the drama we had with Melo throughout the year, this recent drama with Porzingis, and finally the Knicks decided they wanted some change in the front office.
Yeah, and it's something that definitely they needed. Like you said, it's surprising that it took this long. You know, the whole situation with Carmelo Anthony wasn't handled right. And then recently the Kristaps thing. But we know about the Joakim Noah contract. We know about trading for Derrick Rose and then the possibility of re-signing him. So there's plenty of issues with Phil Jackson and what he's done. And, you know, the thing is that, like, the Knicks, when he got there, went to full rebuild and they, like, retooled the roster and it was just terrible again. So then they're about to rebuild again. And, you know, he's only been there 3 years and they're about to start another rebuild.
Yeah, and I think another bright thing is now we get to see, you know, since Phil's gone, the triangle will also go with Phil. So we'll get to see Jeff Hornacek actually run an offense that he knows and feels comfortable running, not having Phil overlook him and push him to coach the triangle. You know, Derek Fisher had the same issue, having tried to implement that triangle. And we'll finally see the Knicks just maybe get a system that they feel more comfortable playing.
Well, you mentioned Jeff Hornacek. That'll be an interesting thing because, you know, a new GM comes in, a new president. You know, they might let him go and bring in their own guy. Another thing that'll be nice to see is, you know, Phil, like, cared about the triangle more than he cared about Kristaps. So now they're probably going to bring in a GM, and the first thing they're going to do is surround Porzingis with players that are going to make him better. And, you know, they're going to get the best out of him. Add a pass-first point guard. Add some young guys. Add some shooters to space the floor for him. So I think, you know, this is really a great move for Porzingis.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this is also New York. So when you lose Phil Jackson, and you, I mean, well, they mutually part ways, but we know probably how that was going to go if he stayed. You finally get maybe free agents to maybe give New York a second look. Now we know they're still going to be they're going to be discombobulated for a little bit now with the, you know, turning over the GM, like you said. Hornacek could be on the way out. Who knows who's going to stay on this roster or how they mold it around Porzingis. But it at least gives players that are free agent, you know, maybe a Derrick Rose, you know, he gives them more of a look. Chris Paul gives them a look. Who knows, like, what kind of agents or free agents you can maybe bring in to surround Porzingis.
Yeah, no, it definitely helps getting Phil out of there, especially, I mean, it's been well noted. We mentioned on a previous podcast how he treated Melo and that kind of turned off Chris Paul. So, you know, they can attract new guys. Obviously, they still have James Dolan, but, you know, playing in New York is still a big deal. So I think that's, you know, a positive for the Knicks moving forward. It'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, how fast are they going to get a new president? You know, obviously, there's still guys in the front office, but they want to bring in new guys, new house, new everything. And there's only 3 days until free agency starts. So it puts the Knicks in a really weird position. Also, the whole Carmelo Anthony thing, like we've kind of touched on a little bit, you know, do you keep Melo? Do you trade Melo? 2 years, $54 million, I think, is still left on his contract. Obviously, this team, even if they do make a great free agent move, they're probably not going to be in the playoffs. So it's like, what do you do with Melo? Do you try to buy him out? It came out yesterday that Melo wants to stay, you know, in New York close to his son. So I would think at the worst that he would want to be in the Northeast.
Yeah, I think the only way Melo leaves the Knicks is if it's by a buyout. I don't see him accepting a trade to any other team. Simply because most teams that they would trade him for, you probably wouldn't get back what you could get back, only because, you know, the Clippers don't have any draft picks, the Cavs don't have any draft picks. So you'd be getting, you know, a Kevin Love or a DeAndre Jordan or somebody like that from the Clippers. So it really doesn't better your chances as a team if you're trying to build around Porzingis and you're not getting any draft picks.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to get the young assets like you said. If Melo was maybe going to go to the Celtics, but they're more interested in Paul George. We're going to kind of move on to that. I know this is close to you being a Pacers fan. The Paul George rumors are going to, they're going to be out there until he is traded. Recently, it came out the Cavs are still trying to work on a deal, and then it also came out that the Celtics feel really confident that they can get George an extension. What are your thoughts so far? How are you feeling about this?
I mean, I know that Paul George is willing to accept an extension if they sign Gordon Hayward. And for the Celtics, we kind of knew Gordon Hayward was going to be one of their top priorities. I mean, we figured that Jimmy Butler and Paul George would be their biggest trade targets, at least. And then we figured Blake Griffin and Gordon Hayward would be the free agents they go after heavily. And I know back in, I want to say March, when the Pacers played against Utah, Paul George made a comment that he would love to play with Gordon Hayward. So, it's kind of just falling into the lap of Boston. If they can get this one guy, Hayward, to come into Boston, he's played under Brad Stevens at Butler. The culture is winning. He may see them as a better option than Utah. I mean, they surely have a bigger cap than Utah. They can definitely do more things with their roster. So it makes Paul George's job a lot easier if he sees, Hayward go there and he feels comfortable enough signing that extension and winning.
Yeah, I know. If they add Hayward, that's just adding another type of player. And I think a lot of people want to play with Hayward is because his game is really complementary in the sense that like he's not going to really interrupt things and be like a ball hog. He's going to work in the offense. He has other parts of his game where he can help if he's not scoring 20 plus a night. So I think obviously he's playing a big piece in free agency right now. It looks like it's down to the Jazz and Celtics. A lot of people are saying the Celtics are the favorite. The Paul George situation is still interesting. What are you hearing in terms of an offer? I heard, the LA slash Sacramento pick and either the Memphis and Clipper pick with a combination of like Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and like Zeller in terms of like money to match it up.
Yeah, I know that the one deal I saw was the Lakers pick, the Sacramento pick, and then it was Rozier, Bradley, and what's his name? He just said it. Zeller,
Zeller?
and then either Crowder or Jaylen Brown. Because the fact of the matter
Yeah.
is, Boston has so many players, and you have to. They're at the point now where if you want to bring in like a guy like Paul George, you have to trade Avery Bradley anyways. Because if you bring in Hayward and you sign Paul George, Bradley doesn't have a spot to play anymore, and you're not going to play him over those two. Jay Crowder doesn't have a spot to play anymore. But, the guys like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, like those guys are proven role players at this point in time. Like, I'm not saying Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart won't be all-stars, but we're still 3 to 4 years away from them being all-stars. And by the time 3 or 4 years passes, we'll see Paul George and Hayward, if they get them past their prime or moving downhill, for those guys to take a bigger step in the locker room.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what the Celtics, they're looking to try to keep as many young guys as they can, especially the guys that they've drafted and they've picked out. I mean, if I'm the Pacers, I'm looking at it and that Lakers slash Sacramento pick, if it falls 2 to 5 next year is not a bad pick at all. And then when I look at the Memphis and Clipper pick, I might ask for the Clipper pick because I don't know what's going to happen with that team. Maybe I sit and wait on the trade a little bit and see if, Chris Paul re-signs, Blake Griffin re-signs, because if they don't, that pick has a lot of value to me.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing that the Pacers want, because it seems like that's the big holdup with any deal with Cleveland or Denver, is just the fact the Pacers aren't getting the draft picks that they want back.
Yeah.
And I think it's smart for the Pacers, especially Kevin Pritchard, because this was not an easy situation. Everyone thought Paul George was going to give them at least a shot. And then it kind of, even though Paul George is trying to do the right thing, as he says, by the Pacers, but giving him a chance to prepare for for him leaving, it really just came out of nowhere for the front office, and it obviously hurt them on draft night because they didn't make a move. And now you're kind of hoping that you can get a big enough trade package back. And the best thing for the Pacers is the fact that the Celtics, that Jimmy Butler went to Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because the Celtics really, it looked like they were leaning far more Jimmy Butler than Paul George until Jimmy Butler went to Minnesota.
Yeah, that's very true. And the Paul George thing, I think it was actually kind of a positive in a sense that they waited past draft night and, maybe they probably wanted to get the deal done and get a player now. But from another perspective, you look at it and now teams kind of are like, oh, wow, the Pacers aren't really trying to force that trade as fast as we thought they were. They made it seem with the reports and everything before the draft that, like, Paul George had to be gone before draft night. And now it's like, you know, they're willing to sit a little bit.
You know what it is, too, I think, Nick? I think that was kind of the Pacers' way of trying to force a Magic Johnson Lakers trade.
Yeah, true,
you know,
true.
That was their way of saying, you know, we really want this number two overall pick, or, you know, or we really want, you know, D'Angelo Russell or Julius Randle, even though we know D'Lo now is a member of your Brooklyn Nets. You know, they were just, I think, trying to get the Lakers to get involved in this trade race. And even still to this point, the Lakers have not really been involved. You know, we hear all these talks about Cleveland. We hear the talks about the Clippers possibly being a dark horse, maybe for like a sign-in trade. And then we have the Celtics. Oh, yeah, and Washington is the newest one. And, man, I had a dream like 2 months ago that he got traded to the Wizards for Otto Porter Oubre in the 2019 first-round pick. And, man, if that happens, I'm the messiah of basketball.
I don't know. I mean, I could see it. It's like John Wall has publicly said that, you know, he's trying to get Paul George and they need a big three. It doesn't seem like they're going to keep Otto Porter in free agency now if they do get one of these big guys. So we'll see what happens there. I mean, do you think – give me your opinion. Do you think George's move before free agency starts, or we see him move sometime in July?
I think you see him move the minute they can get Hayward to ink a deal. I don't think anything gets pulled, at least unless Cleveland, you know, somehow they get a deal together with Denver or whoever. I know Denver is like the only team that seems to want Kevin Love at this point in time.
Yeah.
So unless Cleveland can kind of get a third party, or the Pacers are the only ones hesitant in that deal, because the Pacers don't really like what they're getting back from what I've seen. And on the flip side, yeah, Boston, I think within the first couple of days of free agency, you'll see them try and get a meeting with Gordon Hayward. And I'm sure the pitch will be, look what we're building. If you sign, we have Paul George.
And I think if I'm pitching, if I'm Boston, you know, I'm not only pitching like, look at us now, we're a championship contending team, but look at us in a few years when you're on the down like decline, we'll still have guys to carry you and we'll still be competing even if you turn into role players.
Exactly. And it's just the fact that like we have this next up, like this next man up mentality. You know, the best teams have always been teams that have a bench. And I just like the fact that everyone on the Celtics bench is very young. It's kind of similar to what the Warriors have going on right now in Oakland. Their bench is relatively young with, you know, McCall, Ian Clark, even McGee's decently young. You know, they have a very young bench that gives them a little bit more firepower and athletic ability.
Yeah, when you have a young guy that you can play him and let him develop into a better player, it's such a win-win for your franchise. But moving on from there, we had our first ever NBA awards on Monday night at 9 p.m. What are your thoughts initially about the awards? Did you watch? I know a lot of people were like, I'm not watching that shit.
I didn't watch all of it. I was at work for the first half of it, which is fine because I was watching the clips of the jokes and, man, they were corny. Drake just looked so stiff. He just didn't look comfortable at all, to me at least. 2 Chainz had a decent performance. But, you know, it was all right. A little dragged out. I don't think it needs to be 2 hours long.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Sager Award was amazing. I mean, that was extremely powerful. Ernie Johnson is a tremendous speaker. Bill Russell had one of the greatest sound bites, obviously, I think, from the night with the I could kick all your asses when looking at David Robinson, Shaq, and Kareem and all those guys. But the awards themselves, I mean, they went relatively close to what I expected.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I didn't think it was terrible, as bad as people made it seem like it was going to be. But, you know, they can add a little bit more juice, a little bit more pop next year. Everybody kind of seemed a little stiff. Drake, I thought, had some funny stuff, but some of it was corny, too. And then, like, some of the players were kind of, like, a little bit stiff when they were getting interviewed. I know James Harden froze up a little bit when Drake asked him who his favorite MVP was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the awards, you know, they kind of went how you expected. Like you said, the Craig Sager award to Monty Williams was great. His speech, Monty Williams has always got, like, you listen to him and it just makes you want to be successful. So, and even Westbrook, you know, opening up emotionally about winning MVP, you know, it's not necessarily something we would have expected to see, but he definitely, you know, showed another side of himself.
Yeah, I actually had goosebumps when Monty was talking about everything. It was a very good speech. And then, like you said, you know, Westbrook did it right. You know, he brought his teammates on stage with him.
I like that. That was probably one of my favorite things that he did. I mean, his speech was great, but bringing his teammates out there from the start, he was like, I would really appreciate it if you guys came up here. Like,
Yeah, it just it didn't seem very staged, you know what I'm saying? It seemed very sporadic, and I like that. Especially, you know, that people get a lot, he gets a lot of crap for not being a team guy possibly, you know, or being hard to get along with or whatever. And I just like seeing the guys, you know, obviously rally right behind him. And then him talking about his brother and graduating college, like that was just, it was good. Westbrook went up a few
I
notches
mean,
in my book.
yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, seeing just the amount of emotion and love he was showing to his family was nice to see in his teammates. I think the only surprise, like Westbrook, you know, and Harden maybe could have won, but I mean, it was probably like 75% Westbrook, the rookie of the year. I was actually kind of surprised Malcolm Brogdon won. I actually thought Dario Saric was going to win just because I felt this way. You know, Brogdon was never really a top three player in the Bucks this year or a top two. When you look at Saric, when Embiid went down, he was probably their best player for, you know, the finishing off the last month of the season.
Yeah, no, that was definitely the one surprise. I mean, I obviously picked Embiid, and I just think, you know, obviously the 34 games just wasn't a big enough body of work to give him an award. But I mean, like you said though, Brogdon was never a top three option on his team, and even those 34 games, you know, we saw what the Sixers could be with the even the banged up unit they had with no Ben Simmons. We saw them winning games. You saw them winning, you know, close games, clutch games, you know, Covington hitting threes, TJ McConnell coming through big. And I just think, you know, it makes a fair point for Saric, like you said. When Embiid went down, he just carried the momentum for that hot streak.
Yeah, no, I definitely like. I was under the mindset maybe Embiid might sneak in, but I just thought it was definitely going to be a guy from Philly. But oh well, I mean, Brogdon still had a really solid season. They did make the playoffs and he contributed. So, but other than that, Eric Gordon won Sixth Man. I think that was kind of a known thing. D'Antoni won Coach of the Year. Draymond won Defensive Player of the Year. Giannis won Most Improved Player. I mean, some people probably had Rudy Gobert, but I think Draymond kind of needed to get one soon. He's kind of, not to say that Kawhi didn't deserve the last two, but you know, we felt like Draymond's defensive presence has been changing the game.
Yeah, I jumped on the Gobert chain. I had Gobert winning Defensive Player of the Year, but like you just said, you can't really fault Draymond for winning because Draymond arguably could have won it 2 years ago, but of course, with Kawhi started his back-to-back then. And the same thing with Coach of the Year. I think Coach of the Year, you know, obviously D'Antoni and the Rockets winning 55 games, he's completely well-deserving for how we flipped the culture there in a year. You know, trading away Howard and how quickly that team gathered together, even with the acquisitions of like a Lou Will. But I personally had Spoelstra winning it only because he did so little with so less and just completely beat expectations for the Heat.
I think the one thing that really helped D'Antoni is that he made the risky decision of switching James Harden to point guard, and that turned out to be a tremendous move. Obviously, he had a historical season. If Spoelstra and the Heat, you know, had maybe, you know, snuck into the playoffs and done that, I think he probably would have got the award just because they came up a little bit short, though.
Yeah, I'd agree. If they had snuck into that 8 seed, you know, play Cleveland in the first round, and I think they actually would have beaten the Heat at least one game, or not the Heat. They would have beat the Cavs at least one game. I believe that just because of how well they had been playing. Yeah, they were just tough.
They definitely have that grit and that chip on the shoulder, that whole entire team. But moving on from there, you know, we're going to flash back a little bit to the previous week. We didn't get a chance to talk about this, but Jimmy Butler was traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves on draft night from the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls ended up with the number 7 pick, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and they sent out Butler in the number 16 pick. Initial reaction for this trade.
Fair trade. I know everyone thinks it's lopsided or think, you know, the Bulls got hosed or housed or whatever, however you say it. You know, the Minnesota got out with a steal. I do think the 16th pick going to Minnesota is a little bit overkill.
That's the point that I would say is, you know, if they didn't include that 16 pick, I think it's fine. But like, how could you know, someone had brought up on a previous podcast, you're giving up the best player in the trade and you're trading for a guy who on the other side is coming off a torn ACL. How do you have to give up the 16 pick? You got to hold some type of leverage.
Yeah, and I think maybe, you know, I know it was a major knee injury, obviously his ACL, and maybe they just think the kid's gonna bounce back quick. You know, maybe there's just less worry after seeing medical reports or whatever else that we don't see behind the scenes. I mean, that's the only way I can think about it because, you know, Zach LaVine last year when he was healthy, he was good. He was playing arguably his best. I mean, no, he was playing his best basketball to date. He was shooting the long ball pretty well. He still had the athletic jump. I mean, that's what you worry about, obviously, now, is will he still have that dunking ability and the athletic athleticism that he had prior to the knee injury? And I
I
know,
think.
and I don't know what they see in Chris Dunn, because we know they wanted them last year, but they just added another point guard to their 5 point guards who can't shoot.
Yeah. But the thing about LaVine, I think, you know, like you said, medically, the technology that we have now, a torn ACL is not quite as bad as it was 10 years ago. You know, we've seen a lot of guys come back and have successful careers. He's probably not going to be the elite athlete he was. But with the athletic skills that he has, he'll still be an elite athlete in his, just not in terms of himself, you know, just because he was so like out of this world with his jumping ability. So I still think he'll be a pretty athletic player. I mean, they're really banking on him. They took Lauri Markkanen with a 7th pick. You know, that's a high risk, high reward type pick. And Chris Dunn, we'll see what happens. I think like some people didn't like the Chris Dunn pickup because he's relatively like an older, young player. You know, coming out of the draft, he wasn't, you know, one of those 19 or 20 year olds. So I think he's like around 23. So I don't know. Some people weren't too happy about that. But from the Timberwolves side, you know, this is a great move. You pick up Jimmy Butler, one of the best two-way players in the league, and now you probably have a chance to compete for the playoffs this season.
Yeah, and, you know, Jimmy Butler finally got his guy. You know, getting Jimmy Butler around that, you know, young core of Wiggins and Towns, you know, we know Butler knows how Thibs plays. He's obviously a defensive first-minded player, even though now he's an offensive threat. It really, having that kind of leadership, I think it's going to do so much for Towns and Wiggins. Just having a voice like, you know, Butler, a gold medal champion, countless deep runs in the playoffs, it can only help Minnesota.
Exactly, and he just kind of leads by example because we know he works hard. He's worked on his game a ton. Sets a great example for the young guys. They can build something going forward. And also, I think that, you know, if the Timberwolves move around a few contracts or whatever, they could have up to $24 million cap space. So they could add another big time player. And there's been talk about them wanting to add a point guard. So if they add and trade Rubio, so there could be some more moves in Minnesota.
Yeah, like if they, I know they have like at least $18 million already. I hope Thibs doesn't go after Rose, because we know that there's a lot of Rose Rubio talks prior, you know, during the regular season.
Yeah.
But if he was to go after like a George Hill or a Kyle Lowry, just a point guard who plays decent defense and can be a decent facilitator and score, I think that'd be perfect for them.
And both Lowry and Hill can hit the long ball, and I think that's something they need. They need a shooter on that team, you know, because like Wiggins and Butler aren't, you know, lockdown shooters. So I think adding an elite three-point shooter like a Lowry or a George Hill, both can light it up from deep, would definitely be something positive for them offensively. And then, you know, bring him in and he can play defense too. That's a plus. And, you know, looking at defensive wise, you know, they have a lot of potential on that team.
It's crazy that we can see a marquee free agent head in Minnesota of all places.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and Tibbs has some pretty good ties with players because of his, you know, job with USA Basketball. So, I mean, you never know. I mean, there's some people have mentioned Gallinari going there, maybe playing a little bit of the four. So we could definitely see some interesting stuff from the Timberwolves this offseason.
Getting a little warmer up there. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Bulls, like, you know, they're just starting the rebuild. You got to trade your best player sometimes. It'll be interesting what happens with Dwayne Wade and Rondo. What do you think? Buyouts, or they cut Rondo, take on the $3 million dead cap, or what?
I think they're going to cut Rondo only because I don't, there's just so many point guards. Unless you keep Dunn and cut everyone and cut, you know, a few of the other guys. I know they just let go of Michael Carter Williams Jr. So that's one point guard off the list, but they still got Cameron Payne, who they traded for. And you've got to think they're going to give him a longer shot to prove something, because you traded Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott. So I can't see them getting rid of him. So I think realistically, they go into next season with Chris Dunn and Cameron Payne as their 1 and 2 point guards. You just let Rondo walk.
And you think the same thing with Wade, they probably buy him out?
I don't know if they buy out Wade. A part of me really wants to say that he stays as just a mentor, that maybe he's okay with just playing out this one season and leaving next year.
And he's going to get paid a good chunk of change.
Right. I mean, if they buy him out, I wouldn't be shocked. And I'm sure Wade wouldn't mind getting his $23 million and then going to play for, you know, contender in Cleveland or L.A. or wherever he wants to go. What? Oh, man. I just got a notification from Adrian Wojcicki that Chris Paul agreed to opt into the contract. Clippers are trading the all-star point guard to the Houston Rockets.
Let me confirm this.
Oh, man. Oh, no. Yeah.
Yes, you are correct. It looks like – wow. This is a surprise. This, we were going to talk Dwight Howard, but we'll drop that and talk Chris Paul going to Houston.
Holy which is, crap.
I mean, a lot of people heard this talk about Chris Paul possibly going to Houston, and now it's a real thing. And, you know, they're going to make a trade. It works out for the Clippers because they get, you know, a piece. They're going to get pieces back. But, my God, you know, two of the best playmakers in all the NBA are going to be playing in the same team on the Rockets. Your initial reaction?
It's tremendous. You know, last year, the one of the big issues that the Rockets had was besides James Harden, there was no real playmaker. When James Harden was off the floor, there was no one to facilitate. No knocks on Patrick Beverley. He's a great defender. You know, Lou Williams is a scorer, but there was no other playmaker. And now you add a guy like Chris Paul, who is probably the best point guard we've seen in the league since Magic Johnson. And you're pairing him with the new James Harden, the point guard James Harden, who averaged a league high and career high assists last year. I mean, this could be so much fun with all the shooters that Houston has. And then if I mean, obviously, it's going to be a little bit of sacrifice, but we know Chris Paul has no problem deferring. And we may be able to see Harden raise those scoring numbers a little bit and take a lesser role in the playmaking just because you have a guy like Chris Paul. So Harden can attack offensively differently.
And I think this will kind of allow Harden to get a little bit more rest, too. Like you mentioned, they've just relied on him so much as a playmaker all game long. And he was kind of, I mean, a little bit gassed in the playoffs, it looked like, at some points, the end of games, and obviously the sprained ankle. You know, they rely on him so much. And that if he has a bad game, it seems like the Rockets almost have no chance. So adding Chris Paul, obviously this is going to take a little bit from both of their games. You know, they're not going to put up the same numbers, but they're probably going to be more efficient numbers. You know, playing with somebody like that, not being relied on as much. You know, Chris Paul's going to set up Harden in great situations. And not only is CP3 a great playmaker, he's also a good shooter. You know, it's just another piece you add. Defensively, he adds another great piece to this team because obviously they do need defense. And I would like to see James Harden now. You know, you don't have as much offensive responsibility now. You don't have an excuse not to play defense. So I'd like to see him pick it up on that end now.
Yeah, wow. More of the deal just came through. It's a sign-and-trade. And Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, and Lou Williams, and the 2018 first-round projected pick will go to the Clippers for Chris Paul.
That is not a bad haul for Chris Paul in a sign-and-trade. You know, you don't always get something. He could have easily signed somewhere else for no money at all. I mean, no trade assets back at all. So getting, you know, a first-round pick. Decker's a player that I like. Lou Williams, obviously, and Patrick Beverley. It depends if you're going full rebuild. You don't keep these guys, but if you're going, you know, maybe trying to be relatively competitive, you keep them, or maybe you keep one or two of them.
Yeah, and I you know, it's funny. Jerry West just got hired, and we're already seeing a move in place. I know this obviously wasn't his idea. I'm sure he wanted to keep Chris Paul, but that's a good, like you said, that's a good haul. You know, Lou Will is still relatively young. He can get you through a little bit of a rebuilding period. And easily by next trade deadline, there will be a number of suitors wanting a scorer like Lou Will. Patrick Beverley, he'll be wanted. So, like, if they wanted to, you know, go full rebuild, like you said, they have – these guys are all tradable assets.
Exactly. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just turn around and flip Beverley because he's been a well-connected in trade talks this year. So, and, I mean, you mentioned the Jerry West thing, and it's, like, positive thing that they at least got something because we've easily could have seen Chris Paul – opt out, sign with the Spurs, and get nothing in return.
I mean, yeah, and that's the crazy thing. He literally told them, apparently, that he was going to sign with Houston free agency, and then they still managed to get a sign-and-trade deal out of it. So, I mean, go Jerry West, because when you know a team – I mean, this is the same thing that could have happened with the Pacers and Paul George, you know. When you know a guy is going to leave, your leverage is gone, and this is definitely a great deal for the Clippers.
Exactly, with no leverage. But and then if for Houston, you know – obviously, I don't know about their contract situation now. I'd have to go look at it again. But if I'm not mistaken, they could still move a few pieces and probably have some cap space and sign another big guy or make a move for a big guy. There was talk about them wanting to get rid of the Ryan Anderson contract, and I think that's around $19 million. So maybe they were able to move that for something. But where do you see the Rockets now? Does this, you know, obviously, I kind of already had them as a possibly the second-best team last year, that top two, top three spot in the Western Conference. Does this push them any higher? Are they still on that same level, but they're just a better team now?
They're still this. I had them as the second best team in the West last year as the biggest threat to the Warriors, and I think that's still where they are. I know San Antonio obviously beat them. San Antonio is San Antonio. You can never doubt that. They're always going to be competitive. They're always a possibility of them winning a series. But I do think this move makes Houston slightly better. It definitely moves the needle in the right direction because you just add a Hall of Famer to your roster. It definitely doesn't hurt your chances of winning.
Yeah, and also the fact that is, you are able to add players now on those cheap deals, those vets that are trying to chase winning, and you're playing with a player like Chris Paul and James Harden who are both going to set you up. And I really like this in the sense is this is the direction I see the NBA going, is that you're looking for multiple playmakers in your lineups. It doesn't necessarily just have to be your point guard. Your point guard and your shooting guard can both pass the ball. It's going to be a lot more effective than it's only one guy in your lineup.
Yeah, man, and I guess now, if you're the Rockets, this makes free agency so much easier. Like you said, contract wise, they should be able to bring in another player, especially if they are somehow able to move like a Ryan Anderson or somebody else with a big contract. 'Cause I know that they're still trying to target Paul George possibly, and Gordon Hayward in free agency, maybe even Paul Millsap.
Yeah, or even there was talk about Blake Griffin as well. Even if they're able to grab somebody like a Serge Ibaka, just a solid four, a little bit defensive upgrade at that position from Ryan Anderson, definitely be a fun team to watch. I mean, Houston was already really exciting, but I think, they did add Chris Paul, and that's great and everything, but they do have to add pieces to their bench because that was a major issue in the playoffs. When Nene went down and they were only playing, I think, what, six or seven guys, and they were just getting killed by the Spurs in terms of energy. That hurt them. They need to make sure they fill out this whole team and not just stop it with Chris Paul.
Yeah, and let me ask you this too, Nick. Did you think this was actually a possibility? Like,
I heard it and I was like, you know what? Usually when superstar players like connect with other players, there's a chance that it always can happen because we don't know about their, off the court relationships. And then when Chris Hayes, I think of ESPN, reported a day or two ago that it's a real possibility. I actually thought it could happen. I think Chris Paul looked at it as a sense in like he didn't really want to maybe go to San Antonio, and this is like more of a fun team to play on, and it's a pretty easy role in terms of playmaking. I think maybe he's kind of sick of doing everything himself, for all these years offensively.
Another Woj bomb apparently. Just Paul and James Harden were determined to play together. So,
Yeah, see, exactly like I said, the off the court relationships that we don't know about. These guys play with each other in USA basketball, or they meet at all-star games and this type of thing. And watching two passers like that on the same team is going to be a lot of fun, especially with the shooters that they have, if they do keep, the guys they have, and it could be a really exciting season in Houston.
For sure. And now we're, and you know, it's what do you think happens with Blake Griffin now? You think this is it? You think he's gone for sure now? Or you think there's a chance he resigns?
I have no idea, honestly, like what happens with Blake, because I still was like having a hard time vibing him going into the offseason now. I mean, it really depends on the Clippers. Like, are they going to go full rebuild, which is going to be tough for them because they don't have any young players. So I kind of think that they're not. So maybe they try to max out Blake, keep him. They add Lou, add Patrick Beverley, and then maybe try to sign somebody else in free agency if they have any cap left, and try to still be relatively competitive. They're not. Chris Paul ran that team and he ran that offense. They're not going to be contending. They're not going to probably be a top four seed, but they could probably get pieces to make themselves competitive in the West and maybe win a low seed and, kind of keep the Clippers relevant, because we know for so many years they weren't relevant and they finally got to that winning level, winning 50 plus games, and they're going to want to keep, their name mentioned, especially with the Lakers coming to make that uprise.
Yeah, I think, like you just said, the Lakers are definitely now about to be the face of LA again following this move. Because now, also, another domino that's likely to fall. We heard some rumblings about DeAndre Jordan possibly getting moved. He's got to be pissed. He got held hostage 2 years ago to stay on the team, and now he's stuck here with everyone leaving. But it's possible that even he gets moved now. Because we know we can trust Jerry West. He did build what is out in Oakland right now. He did help build that three-headed monster or four-headed monster, whatever you want to call it. Man, crazy.
Yeah, I think they move, if they go to rebuild, they move DeAndre, and I think you get a pretty, probably a first round pick for DeAndre and a player. Depends on like the leverage that they have in that situation if they're willing to keep him. But I mean, maybe DeAndre is happy he gets to shine a little bit more, but you know, Chris Paul made him really good. So offensively, he's going to miss those lobs.
Yeah, that's something, you know, he wanted those more offensive touches. He's certainly going to get them now.
Do you think this is, you know, the one of the biggest splashes we'll see all offseason, or is this going to be an exciting offseason upcoming now?
This is just another – I mean, when's the last time two marquee superstars like Jimmy Butler and Chris Paul were both traded before free agency in the offseason? I mean, we're not even –
And we could see Paul George move by the end of the week, and that could be three guys.
Yeah, and like we just said, with DeAndre Jordan, and we still don't know about Melo. There's just so many pieces. You know, I don't think I've ever seen this much turnover in the NBA since I've started watching it, you know, six, seven years ago, like heavily. It's
the Warriors making you crazy things.
Exactly. Yeah. This, you know, they put the bar so high that everyone has to now jump leaps and bounds to try and even compete.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's going to be exciting. And I think it's going to be like, you're going to see teams realize, you know, I've said this like a million times is, you know, I can add one more piece or do a crazy move, go over the cap, and maybe I can compete with the Warriors. Like the Rockets right now, I'm sure they have a few more tricks up their sleeves. Their finished product, they're going to think that they could probably compete with the Warriors. And I thought last season, I didn't think they'd beat the Warriors in a series, but I thought they'd give them a pretty good series. So adding Chris Paul, a player like that, who is hungry and he needs a ring, you know, for his legacy, it's going to be a big year for him.
Yeah, and actually, I just thought of this too. With Lou Will going to the Clippers, it might make a guy like Jamal Crawford also expendable.
Yeah,
because those guys have the same exact role pretty much, and one's younger.
They can move some of these guys, add to somebody's bench. You know, people like that are always needed in the league. We've seen how important bench play was, even in the finals with the Warriors bench play outplaying the Cavs, and they're just more consistent. And you know, having guys like that can come in and play hard for you make a big difference.
Agreed.
So, but that wraps it up. The way things are going right now, it seems like we might be on here like every day recording a podcast, but you know, who knows? If not, we'll be on here either next time when Paul George is traded, or we'll be on here July 1st. But thank you guys for listening. Corey, thanks for hopping on.
Not a problem. Adios.